Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you've caught up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you. This is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. We're taping this on Thursday like we usually do in the NFL season. Only one podcast this week because the college football season has come to an end. Congratulations to the LSU Tigers who beat Clemson. So, Travis, does that at least make you feel a little better about Ohio State?
I didn't know a game was going on Monday night. I watched some other shows, went to bed by 10:30.
Sure you did.
I think, which was halftime.
Some drama, not with the side, but with the total. Big crash on the over-under on Monday, and it lands 67. So really interesting because it went all the way down to 66 at some shops. But we'll get into all that with John Murray, Mr. Executive Director of the Las Vegas Superbook at the Westgate in a little bit. We're also going to talk Conor McGregor and Cowboy Cerrone. They square off also in Vegas on Saturday night. Chael Sonnen is going to join me for a little bit, a quick preview of who he likes in that main event. We're also going to talk a little baby bankroll bonanza as well with Murray, so a lot to get through. But before we get started, if you like today's podcast, I recommend you check out the First Draft podcast with Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay, the NFL Draft, right around the corner, and they have everything you need to get you ready for the draft. Download and subscribe to First Draft and Behind the Bets on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Now, a word from DraftKings. Can you believe it's conference championship week? Obviously, both games are intriguing. Similar point spreads. We'll get into that. Well, time's up for two of the teams playing this weekend, but you still have time to feed your fantasy fix with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a free shot at over $750,000 with your first deposit. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing users can get deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with throughout the playoffs. Download the DraftKings app now and use code Doug. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500 on your next deposit. New users, be sure to enter code Doug during signup, and you'll also get a free shot at over $750,000 with your first deposit. That's code Doug. You can get a deposit bonus up to $500 only at DraftKings. $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25x playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Isn't that the truth? And as we go out to Las Vegas and bring in Chael Sonnen, a UFC analyst here at ESPN, but also a former fighter, he knows what it's like in the octagon in these main events. Chael, thank you for taking the time.
Man, I wouldn't miss it. I got to tell you too, Doug, there's something special going on in the air out here. Conor mania is a real thing.
So what does that mean? What do you mean by Conor mania is a real thing?
You can feel the energy. I mean, listen, this guy is so popular, people are flying in from Ireland enough to fill up an arena, $10 million gate in less than 5 minutes, and a large part of them are truly his own countrymen. I mean, and they take over the streets, and they sing, and they party, and they got great attitudes, but you feel it. Everywhere you go in Vegas, not just T-Mobile, you feel it, man. It's fight week.
And it's only Thursday morning. It's only going to intensify. When I lived out there for 7 years, there's nothing like a fight night in Vegas. I encourage everyone, whether it's boxing or UFC, go out there and walk the strip. Feel that vibe. I know what you're talking about. But I will say this. Part of the McGregor sort of allure and attraction for those fan bases is just his edge and his competitive fire and his sort of abrasive personality at times. But we're seeing a different McGregor in the media interviews. Are you concerned that that's not going to be the same, that we're not going to see the same McGregor in the octagon?
Well, I think that that's a very real thing. Now, I will admit for you, we're splitting hairs here. This is a very slight, impactful decision that he's made to be a gentleman and to be classy and to show sportsmanship and respect. It's very slight, but it does affect your approach. I mean, listen, Doug, one of the real parts about doing the media is whatever you start to say starts to become real. You start to believe it once you start to say it. And that's something that Connor's always done. I mean, he's talked about violence and he's going to stop guys, and he's known as Mystic Mac for giving predictions of which then turn out to come true. He's talking about going five rounds. He's talking about having a long, drawn-out fight with Cowboy. And, you know, those things can start to be real. Your approach is a very real thing. Connor oftentimes manufactures conflict. It isn't true. Sometimes he doesn't even know his opponent, but he works himself into a frenzy. And we've seen how well that's done for him, spread over three world championships. It's different this time. So it's an experiment. I don't fully know what to make of it.
Well, let's talk about what we do know is his fighting capabilities in the octagon, but it's different. He's going up to 170. You and I talked on Daily Wager. It's his second career fight ever doing that. He's done that twice, both against Nate Diaz, split those outcomes. But how do you see this fight unfolding in terms of, like, the strategy for both fighters and who wins?
Okay, here's the bad news for Cowboy. You got 3 minutes of hell out there with Connor, and this is just by the numbers. If you go back and look at Connor's career, not only does he stop guys, not only does he stop them in the first round, he stops them in the first 3 minutes of the very first round, and he does it largely with the same way. He's going to distract you. He'll kick you in the stomach. He'll kick you in the leg. He'll start yelling at you if that's what it takes to get you to pause and look at him so that he can slip in that lethal left hand. He lands that on everybody. He landed that on Floyd Mayweather countless times and got the great Floyd's attention by it. So this is a very real tool, but he will spend 90% of his time in there distracting you so that he can set that up. If Cowboy can get past those 3 minutes, if the tornado comes and a tree is still left standing, things start to sway in his favor. Now, it's going to look a little better 7 and 8 and 12 minutes in. I'm just using 3 by example because Connor usually finishes fights and he finishes them in the first half of the very first round. I think if Cowboy can pressure him, I think if Cowboy can either circle left into that power, but watch for it, circle right, stay away from that power completely, I think he's got really good chances. And don't forget, Doug, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you, this is the game Cowboy likes to play. So many people are making a big deal that Cowboy's saying he's going to stand with Connor as opposed to go to the ground. Cowboy's a kickboxer. This is exactly the kind of fight that he wants, and for some reason, that's going over people's heads.
Interesting. Well, here, look, Connor's a big favorite, nearly 3.5 to 1. The comeback about plus 270 or so. Do you think there's value here on Cowboy then?
Yeah, I really do. I think the Cowboy's going to find an upset here. I think the biggest reason for that is the 170 pounds. Cowboy can just take a couple of those shots, even if he has a bad game plan. Even if Connor's speed, which appears from my living room to be super fast, I'm talking about Connor can get to that target a couple of times, but Cowboy can take a couple of those shots because he is going to have that size advantage. The shockwaves just don't quite go through the body the same way. I think Cowboy's going to get to him. I think he's going to wear him down. I think that a main event, five-round atmosphere in the wrong weight class is a lot to ask of anybody, but particularly with almost 400 days off, and that's what Connor's up against.
Yeah, I would agree with you. There's no way I could lay that big of a number, especially with the weight change and obviously the layoff. I just wanted to get someone as experienced as you are to kind of discuss it and flush this out. Chael, look, I know you're busy. Looking forward to your coverage all throughout the weekend. Thanks as always, my man.
Doug, you're awesome. Thanks, pal.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Boy, is it. Welcome in to the podcast, Mr. Director. How do you feel about the trend of kicking, including Mr. Bill O'Brien?
Well, Bill O'Brien blew the AFC Championship game with that field goal. I mean, I even tweeted out right there, we were about to put up Houston-Tennessee AFC Championship game, and we saw the field goal unit come on the field, and we said, hold on, they're going to lose.
And sure enough, that's exactly what happened because, I mean, look, one could argue it was inevitable, but you think the momentum and everything, like going up 28-0 would have been the dagger?
I don't know. I mean, they might have still come back. And obviously, the Kansas City might have stopped them on 4th-and-1.
True.
But I just thought that was such a loser move. And then if you remember, right after the field goal, Kansas City had a long kickoff return. They scored a touchdown. I think Houston fumbled the ensuing kickoff, if I have that right.
Yeah, off a hit. It was popped up in the air.
Yeah, and then from there, you knew what was going to happen. But I thought that was a huge momentum swing, like you just said, and I didn't agree with it at all. You know, you're a big dog there. You got to go for the jugular, and it was fourth and less than a yard. I mean, it's not like we're talking about, oh, they should have gone for it on fourth and eight or something like that. It was fourth and like a couple feet. I can't believe he'd kicked a field goal there. But that's how most of these coaches coach, and that's why I always make fun of them. And people, I see people on social media like, oh, get a new bit. Enough with the kicking stuff. Well, when these coaches stop making terrible decisions, I'll stop joking about it.
I mean, that's the issue is we're just calling them like we see them. And we're not always right. Like, obviously, Harbaugh against the Titans went for it aggressively, but that's what they do. And just because things don't succeed doesn't mean it was the wrong decision. You can't evaluate things. This goes back to, like, whether to walk a guy in baseball or whether to, anything in life as well, even outside of sports. You just have to evaluate the data and the input you had at the time of the decision and don't be so results-oriented with the after the fact. And it was funny. I thought on the opening drive, Clemson kicked punted instead of a long field goal like they did against Ohio State. I wonder if Dabo's kicking the field goal, if he had made it the first week, right? Or the national
semifinal
game.
Yeah, he might have. Yeah, that's a good point. And I, just for the record, I thought Baltimore was right to go for it on those fourth downs, and I actually thought Seattle was right to punt on fourth down in the fourth quarter. I thought that was the right move. Aaron Rodgers just made some really good throws on third down. I mean, they forced Aaron Rodgers to make some extremely tough throws, and Aaron Rodgers got it done, and the Packers won the game. But I didn't have a problem with that Seattle punt.
Yeah, no, look, what was it, fourth and like six?
It was four. I think it was more than that. I think it was more like fourth and eight or nine, if I remember correctly. But, you know, they got Green Bay into some relatively long third down situations, and Aaron Rodgers made one exceptionally good throw to move the sticks. And then there was that play to Jimmy Graham, the controversial play to Jimmy Graham, too. So,
yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know. I'm being nice by saying controversial. But they forced Rodgers and the Green Bay offense to make some plays, and they did.
Okay, so how did the books do last week?
Well, we did great on Saturday, and you can imagine how much money we won on the Titans game. The only downside for us was we had such a great future position on Baltimore, and Baltimore was going to be favored all the way through the Super Bowl. So losing them, I'm still kind of shocked that they lost that game, to tell you the truth. I didn't think there was any way they could lose that game outright. But we won a huge number on that. That was our biggest win of the season so far in football, was that Tennessee-Baltimore game. And we also won a pretty decent number on the 49er-Viking game.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. You know, I've been, you know, big on the Titans having a chance. Of course, I didn't partake in the Titans at 30 or 40 to 1, whichever we talked about at the beginning of the postseason. Mm-hmm. I just felt like this team had the makings. And I'll say this about that Ravens game. They covered really well. There were like a couple times the Ravens receivers were wide open. Like every other time, throws were contested, and they obviously controlled the line of scrimmage in a lot of ways. So it was an impressive effort across the board.
A great game plan from them defensively. You know, really, I know that Lamar Jackson's final numbers looked okay, but that was really just because Tennessee was giving up those short throws to keep the clock moving in the second half. And when Tennessee was playing true defense in the first half, Lamar Jackson really couldn't do anything against them. And he looked really out of sorts. It kind of reminded me of that Charger game the year before. So I was really impressed with the Titans' game plan. I did laugh, though, a little bit. I saw a lot of people on Twitter taking I told you so about Ryan Tannehill victory lap. And I thought that was funny because Ryan Tannehill really didn't do anything in that game, just like he really didn't do anything in the New England game. Now, he didn't lose either of the games, obviously. But I wouldn't say that the Titans are winning those two playoff games because of Ryan Tannehill.
He made the plays they were asking him to make. But I'll say this, and I said this Sunday morning on the show, Daily Wager. It's just the Ravens-Titans games reminded me of something I've known all along, and I need to think like this more when I bet the postseason. And it's a little bit of a rant, but it's a healthy reminder. So obviously working at ESPN, you get the privilege of a lot of things, but you also get the privilege of talking to a lot of ex-players. And I talk to these guys, and I want to know sort of a why. I ask a lot of why annoying questions in case, for those who don't know me. And basically,
I've never noticed that.
The Peyton Manning thing, it's like, why is he so much quote-unquote worse in the playoffs. And here's sort of like the reason I got sort of talking to everyone. Mm-hmm. We all know that headshot of him in like the ice tub or the hot whirlpool, and he's wearing like a helmet looking at his playbook, the iPad, right? Where he's just like always on top of everything, engrossed, immersed in football. So he is preparing better than like any opponent during the regular season. But the gap of preparation between him and his opponent is a lot narrower in the postseason. And I've talked to these
everybody's preparing.
Yeah, so like I've talked, I think Eric Allen talked to me about this, even Brian Dawkins I remember talking to about this. They say just like that week of any playoff week, just every playoff week, like they're barely talking to their wives. They're all like focused on work. They're in early, like film, everything. It's all hands on deck, to use a cliche. So that effort by the Titans, you're just not going to get that during the regular season. A, the game plan, the players flying around, doing all that intense preparation and execution. I'm not saying the NFL is the NBA, where you have the regular season and the playoffs and just the effort sometimes. Because obviously it's not. But there is a gap. And that's why we talk about flat spots and all that stuff. You're just not going to get that intensity, especially when you make a bunch of money, except for guys like Peyton Manning. And my point is, that was awesome, and that was ridiculously great, and they're peaking at the right time, so to speak, kind of like the Giants did a couple years. But it's just, we have to remind ourselves that these aren't played in the regular season. Like, the Packers' effort this weekend is not going to be like that game in San Francisco earlier in the season, week 12. Now, they may get blown out, but it's just, you're just going to get a different sort of intensity. We saw that with a lot of that. We saw, you just see it in the playoffs. Now, maybe I'm just finding a convenient narrative, but what it takes to beat the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and all that sort of focus and the mesh point of the option and all that, you just from a week to week, we see it. We talk about it in college with the triple option offenses. It's hard to prepare. So I just think that was a reminder that things are a little different in the postseason.
They are, and I agree with you, but Baltimore still, you think about that play right before halftime, long throw Lamar Jackson had. They had a first and goal. If they could have punched that in there, it would have been 14-10 at halftime, and they got the ball first in the second half. And then even on that first drive of the second half, they went for it on that 4th-and-1, and they got stuffed. A couple plays here or there, Baltimore might have been able to steal or win that game. But I do agree with you. And then the other thing, too, is why is it harder in the postseason than the regular season? Well, the level of competition is a lot higher.
Correct.
Lamar Jackson, and I don't want to be one of those guys that takes away from Lamar Jackson's regular season because he struggled in the playoffs, because I think that's stupid and unfair. But he's not playing the Bengals. He's not playing the Dolphins. He's playing playoff.
But if they had played that game, if they had played each other in the regular season, I don't think the Titans would have been like as intense and as focused and had the right game plan.
Well, that's probably true.
But to your point, this game, even though it was like a lopsided score and even like it felt, was not the same as Minnesota-San Francisco. The Vikings had 4 first downs. This was about a handful of leverage plays. 2 key 4th downs, one in the first half, one in the opening drive of the second half, as you alluded to, and then the Titans converting a bunch of 3rd downs. And that's the difference of the game. So, as to your point, I mean, even at halftime, the Ravens were favored to win the game based on the second half line. So, to your point, even with all that being said, the Ravens were right there to win the game despite everything going wrong, even like a drop touchdown pass, or that could have been a touchdown pass on a long pass when they were down 14-0. They went 3 and out, the Titans did in the first possession. Ravens had the ball, throw to Andrews that was a little high, and who knows, it wasn't complete domination. You 100% agree.
Tennessee made an incredible catch, too, for their first touchdown.
Yeah, on 3rd down.
It was 3rd and really long, too. Yeah. It was 3rd and more than 10. And it was just a crazy catch at the corner of the end zone. I believe he got his butt cheek down, Doug.
I thought it was a calf. Was
it a calf? I always laugh when it's any body part is equivalent to 2 feet, whether it's a butt cheek or a hand or a calf or a knee.
I did see one replay like Tuesday. It took me a couple of days. That was like, okay, yeah, he definitely got in. Like there's one replay that wasn't going around until like later in the week. Okay, so here we are. Championship Sunday, where I start to get depressed and realize there's only 3 NFL games.
Depressed.
Well, there's only 3 NFL games.
You get depressed because of that?
I can't even enjoy the conference championships. I already start getting depressed.
Really?
Yeah, it's bad.
There's so many other sports to look forward to. What's your favorite sport? I've known you for years. Your favorite sport hasn't even gotten rolling yet. They're not playing. They're not even playing significant games yet in your favorite sport, the NBA.
I know. There's just something about football and football betting, man.
Yeah.
College football too. I already miss that.
I miss college football. There's nothing better than those college football Saturdays. Those are the best. They're the best.
Okay. So we have two lines of 7.5, essentially. Now there's some sevens minus 20. Actually, 7 minus 110 at your shop for Kansas City.
Yeah, we opened 7 yesterday.
Yeah, so both favorites, both home teams opened 7, went to 7.5, and then we've seen some movement.
Well, we actually opened the AFC Championship game 9.5, and we were very surprised. I mean, it was funny. Nobody was willing to bet us at 9.5 until some other books opened up lower than us, and then they decided, 9.5 is a good bet. And they started taking 9.5 when they saw 7.5s on the market. So we did write, I wouldn't say a lot of money, but we wrote a handful of bets on Tennessee at 9.5, at 8.5, at 8, and right, we got all the way down to 7 yesterday. But the ticket count, pretty lopsided in this game. Most of the money is on the Chiefs. Most of the tickets are on the Chiefs, I should say, excuse me. We'll probably end up needing the Titans when this thing kicks off. And you know you're going to get a lot of money line parlay and teaser action with the two favorites, too.
Well, it's funny. I mean, we might do something on the show today just talking about the math involved. So there are some shops / skins that still do minus 110, 6.2 team teasers. Mm-hmm. And then a money line parlay is about $1.40 if you money line parlay. So you're basically looking at, will there be a 1-point win? And that's what you have to sort of assess. Obviously, the math says just do the teaser.
If you could do a minus 110 6-pointer and you could get both those teams down to 1, 1.5, the two favorites, I think that'd be a good bet. I mean, I think long term doing that, you're going to come out on top.
Right, and we've talked about key numbers ad nauseum, but let's just sort of put it a different way. And I've tried to explain this to some friends, and I figure this is like something to sort of articulate here on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So we talk about key numbers 3, 7, 4, and 6, right? Well, look at it a different way, and let's make it more apples to apples with the minus 110. Anyone who's tried to buy a half point, what do you guys charge for a half point off 3?
3 is minus 135, or minus 140 now.
Okay, so it's 30 cents to go from 3.5 to 3?
Yeah.
Or 3 to 2.5?
Yeah. Or the other way, 3 to 2.5.
Or 3 to 3.5, right. And then for 7, it's also 35 cents?
30 cents.
30 cents, okay.
Minus 130.
Okay, so just think about that, for those listening at home. To go from 7 to 6.5 or 7.5, depending if you're on the favorite of the dog, it costs 30 cents. And the half points off the 3 are 35 cents. So just apply that sort of math to the minus 110 advantage you have to tease through all those numbers. So it's not just the key number concept of the landing those numbers. It's just the math of what it costs, the price of those 3s and 7. So think of it like that. So when you have two spreads of 7.5, why buy it to 7 or even 6.5? So buying a full point's like 60 cents, right? It's a dollar. Just tease it, and then the math makes so much more sense. You can do open teasers to maybe something in the NBA or just whatever. Save them all for next football season. Save them for the Super Bowl. Save them for the XFL, whatever you want to do. But
I don't know if I'd save them for the XFL.
You don't think the opening lines in the XFL are as sharp as the conference title games?
I don't know. I don't think that market's going to be quite as strong as the NFC-AFC championship game market. You know, Mr. David Purdom yesterday called me and asked me to do an interview with him about the XFL. And I was like, well, I'm happy to, sir, but I don't know anything about it. But we can fake our way through this interview. I did the best I could, I'll say that.
And that starts the week after the Super Bowl. So, obviously, my complaining just a moment ago about missing football, hey. And I was actually, you know, I said something to Steve Levy, like they're going to have some gambling content on that broadcast. That's going to be part of the fabric of the XFL. Yeah. It's probably not going to be quite like boxing and UFC, but it will be a part of the fabric of the sport, which is awesome. And you know, there's going to be live line. There's going to be so much good stuff there. So, okay. I did find it interesting that the money line is very similar. Like you guys have the money line at San Francisco minus 350, but Kansas City 330. And to me, that makes more sense because the over-under in the game is so much lower in San Francisco game than it is the Kansas City game. So the 7.5-point favorite in a low-scoring game is more of a favorite on the money line, per se, than
we're
one
a little
in Kansas
higher,
City. Right.
We're a little higher on the NFC point spread, but you're right, too.
But some books are the same, and that's what surprised me.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I will say about this NFC Championship game, there's a lot of money on Green Bay money line, but it's not nearly as lopsided as it was 3 years ago. If you remember the Green Bay Atlanta NFC Championship game in 2016, everybody was on the dog like crazy in that game, and we needed the favorite Falcons huge. That's not really the case here. There's a lot of Green Bay money line bets for like nickel and dime bets, but the ticket count on the point spread itself is almost exactly even right now.
And that game was like 1.5, right? It came down.
Oh, no. It was higher. It was, I don't remember exactly, but it was higher than that.
Oh, I missed
Atlanta was playing to a really high power rating at the end of the year. And Green Bay had just won in Dallas the previous week. Remember the incredible throw Aaron Rodgers made down the sideline there?
Yeah, the left sideline. So, he was playing at a ridiculous level.
Oh, yeah. Rodgers was at a higher level at that point in his career, but you know what? When he needed to make throws on Sunday, he made them. And that's something I'm going to remember going into this game this Sunday. Maybe he was holding back during the season because he didn't need to make those plays. When he absolutely had to make throws, he looked like the old Aaron Rodgers.
I will say this. 13 wins for that Packers team, as much as we want to criticize, and
I've been one of the people criticizing them, too. I admit that.
And it's a lucky 13. Get this. 13 win teams in conference championship games, okay, where dogs by at least 7 are 3-0 outright. Now, it hasn't happened since 1999 when the Titans went to the Super Bowl, but 13 win teams are 3-0.
The Titans were that big of a dog against Jacksonville? I guess that makes
sense.
Because that Jacksonville team like crushed the Dolphins in the divisional playoff, right?
Right, and the year before Atlanta, also a 13-win team, the Dirty Bird.
I remember that one.
Went into Minnesota, Gary Anderson misses the field goal, and they go right in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Morton Anderson, I believe, was their kicker. I get that confused. And then the good
old
1990.
Remember the 98 NFC Championship.
What about 1990, the Giants?
Giants at the 49ers?
Yeah, plus 8.
Yeah. And they won 15-13 on 5 field goals, right?
I don't remember. I love that you do. Yeah. That's awesome.
I think it was all field goals. I don't think they scored a touchdown. I remember. I kind of remember watching that game. But the 49ers were going for a third straight Super Bowl title, I believe.
Yeah, I mean that they were pretty much a juggernaut. It was 15-13. You're right. And then
I don't think the Giants scored a touchdown in that game.
That led to Scott Norwood's missed field goal, and Roger Craig fumbled that game. Yeah. I think too.
They fumbled late. I think Montana fumbled late in the game. Kind of
Craig fumbled, and then they had the opportunity to kick that game.
Oh, Craig fumbled.
Okay, so no sharp action just yet, right?
No. And the guy we had guys that were moving the market on us the first two rounds, sharp players that did well during the regular season, and so far they have not weighed in on either of the conference championship games. So these markets look like they're pretty tight right now. I guess we opened the AFC game too high, but really there hasn't been a whole lot of movement. We did take, right when we opened it on Sunday, we took a $50,000 bet on San Francisco -7 from one of our house players, and there's been a steady stream of, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 bets on all the sides. But so far, I wouldn't say any of it is what I would call sharp.
Do you think there's any tax on Tennessee or against Tennessee, just given this is their... they've played, this will be their fourth straight road game. I mean, the Week 17 game, which I know was against A.J. McCarron, mm-hmm. but still, playoff-type mode, had to get the win. Then they go to Foxborough, then they go to Baltimore, and now they're in Kansas City.
Yeah, and I also kind of, I kind of lean to Kansas City. Like, if I had to play something, which I'm not going to bet any of this stuff, but if I had to play something, I'd probably go Kansas City because I almost feel like they got their terrible performance out of the way last week. You know, they almost gave away that game against the Houston Texans, and they got their scare out of the way. Just, I don't know how much I trust Andy Reid in this game, man. And, you know, after we saw Baltimore lose on Saturday night, I said to the guys on Sunday morning, my God, if Andy Reid doesn't get this team to the Super Bowl, he really should just retire. How many breaks could Kansas City get on their way to the Super Bowl? They get New England loses in Week 17 as a 17-point favorite. They get a bye. Tennessee beats New England for them. Tennessee beats Baltimore for them. All they have to do is win two home games as a touchdown favorite. and they almost blew it last week. I can't imagine them blowing this game. I really can't.
This feels like it's Reed and Mahomes' year, right?
It does to me, and I can't imagine that they would blow this game. I agree with what you're saying about Tennessee. They've had a tough road to get here. It's all there for Kansas City, and Patrick Mahomes is such a young player. I'm sure he will individually will get better over the next few years than he is now, but I don't know that he'll ever have a path like this to a Super Bowl again the rest of his career, and he needs to take advantage of it.
You guys probably hoping for Mahomes and the Chiefs just for props, right? Like it's the sexiest team alive.
There's no question about it. If Kansas City wins the AFC Championship game, we're going to get a very high profile, high volume Super Bowl, no matter who wins the NFC game. Whereas if Tennessee wins, I don't know that Tennessee San Francisco is a really high volume Super Bowl. Tennessee Green Bay would be a little bit better just because Green Bay has got such a national fan base and Aaron Rodgers playing. But really, for a high-profile game, you're going to want Kansas City to win here.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It's just easier to do props for Mahomes than it is Tannehill. And you're just going to get a lot more interest on that front. Let's say it's KC San Fran. What's your Super Bowl line?
Well, we have all those up. I mean, we have I can pull all those up. We've got the possible Super Bowl matchup numbers if you want to run through those. Right now, Kansas City, San Francisco, obviously that's the most likely matchup. And we've got Kansas City as a 1-point favorite with a total of 51. We were at Pick'em on this game. We wrote a handful of money on the Chiefs at Pick'em, and we went to Kansas City 1.
That's tough. It's just offense versus defense right there. I mean, it's just so intriguing.
That's definitely the best Super Bowl matchup because the one thing that definitely showed up this past Saturday, San Francisco got their defensive guys healthy again.
Yes.
And it really made a big difference. And they just looked overwhelming defensively in that game. So to get them going up against Kansas City, Andy Reid would have 2 weeks to prepare for that game. Obviously, we know his record off a bye week is incredible. So give Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes 2 weeks to get ready for that 49er defense. That's a great matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Packers would be awesome too.
We have Kansas City -4.5 in a potential Super Bowl against Green Bay.
See, I don't like that because I think that's too high, and I'll tell you why, and you obviously know this. If Green Bay were to reach the Super Bowl, they will have won in San Francisco, so obviously the perception and the power rating will go higher, and that way I think it could be like 3.
All these numbers are so dependent on how these games go on Sunday.
Right.
I mean, we saw that, what was it, four years ago? The best example I can ever remember is that Carolina-Denver Super Bowl where Carolina ended up being like a 6 or a 6.5 point favorite because they just destroyed Arizona in the NFC Championship game. And Denver had barely survived New England in the early game. And that line was way higher than it would have been. So... And I can give you a more recent example. I know that LSU won the game by 17, but LSU would have never been a 6-point favorite against Clemson if they hadn't beat Oklahoma by 100 touchdowns or whatever it was. So there's a lot of recency bias there in these games like that. So if Kansas City were to blow out Tennessee and win by 3 or 4 touchdowns, and Green Bay squeaks by the 49ers in overtime, Kansas City will be more than a 4.5-point favorite.
All right, well, let's talk about that LSU game. Hold on.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Yeah, we've been talking all sorts of stuff here, Murray, as Bob Lee articulated. Okay, the line closed, what, 4.5 at your place?
Yeah, 4.5. Total got all the way down to, I think, 66.5. There was such a flood of money on Clemson. I mean, every wise guy on the planet was on Clemson, almost to the point where it made you a little nervous. Like, oh man, every sharp and like supposed sharp guys all over Clemson in that game. That makes you a little nervous, I think.
You know, it's funny. We talked about it on the show, and Joe Fortenbaugh did a great job sort of articulating what I've said a lot as well, but he just did it. And he's like, look, I know there's value on Clemson. I'm just not betting against LSU. They've trucked every opponent. You can tell me there was value on Oklahoma +14. They got blown out. So you can talk about all the models and all this stuff. I mean, that's basically what he was saying. And he was like saying, shove it. And he's like, this team is awesome. It's the national championship. They have a quarterback who's having arguably the best season ever in college football history. And I'm just not going to get in front of this train. And I couldn't bet Clemson. I was like, I had the over. I saw the huge move on Monday. Thank God for it, because I took the over 66.5. I played some over on a bigger number and lost that, but did play second half under. But either way, I just couldn't get behind sort of the move on Monday.
Yeah, I can see that. And you know, we talked about it obviously a lot leading up to the game, and I thought we were going to lose a lot more than we did if LSU covered, but there was just such an onslaught of Clemson money late. Sharp guys coming in making their bets. We had a guy show up and bet about 80,000 on Clemson +5 on Monday. And then the game staying under saved us a lot of money. And then we had guys betting Clemson second half for pretty big numbers. I think one guy had 30,000 on Clemson pick'em second half. So we lost on the game because the public was just absolutely all over LSU. But we didn't lose nearly as much as I thought we would have lost. If you'd asked me a week ago, if you told me this was going to be the final score, I would have thought we would have lose considerably more than we did. But there was just so much Clemson support. And you got to give a lot of credit to LSU and Ed Orgeron. And Ed Orgeron's a guy that I made fun of for years. And he certainly made me look like a fool this year. So I give full credit to LSU, full credit to Burrow. I thought Burrow's receivers really helped him out, made some great plays for him. Lawrence's receivers really didn't help him out at all. But I give full credit to LSU for that win.
Look, it was a weird game. Clemson was right there, first drive of the second half, scores a touchdown. Burrow, it looked dinged up. They thought maybe he had a broken rib or something for a hit he took at the end of the first half. I'm not saying it was a landslide from the start, but it's just hard to fade a team like LSU in that juncture. Now, got to grab the points and all that, but in a situation like that where Clemson's won 29 in a row or whatever it was, but it was a fun ride for LSU, that's for sure, and you don't see it very often, but they were just awesome ATS. Now, Clemson was actually the best in the country ATS this season until that loss in the national championship game, so you don't see that very often with these high-profile teams, but they were just trucking people, not just winning, but covering as well.
A lot of nonsense after the game. I saw people going, Clemson finally played a real opponent. It's like, well, hold on. They beat Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. They beat Alabama in the national championship game last year. Clemson was a great, great team. They just lost to another great, great team in LSU. That's all it was.
Yeah, they weren't exactly FSU either from a couple years ago, squeaking by and remaining undefeated, trailing at every halftime. They were blowing everyone out, covering, I think it was six straight against FBS opponents. So, no, they were a great team. LSU was a great team, too, and LSU beat them.
Ohio State was a great team, too. I mean, we had a year in college football where there were three exceptionally great teams, made for a great college football playoff, and LSU, one of the best seasons in recent memory. Joe Burrow, one of the best seasons of all time. Now we just got to turn the page to next year.
That is true, and we can also turn the page to the UFC, where...
Kicking is for losers.
Not necessarily. Kicking is encouraged in the UFC, so we like that.
That's a very good point.
No surprise, McGregor's line is going up here against Cowboy Cerrone. What do you make of this line movement? I mean, it's expected, but how lopsided are you?
You know, there's a lot of support on Cowboy, too, and I know we always talk about this when there's a big fight, but what you get is you get the guy that he comes in, he wants about $100. You tell him he's going to win about $30 if he bets it on Connor, and he goes, well, what if I bet on Cowboy Cerrone? Well, you'd win $270, and then they go, okay, then give me Cowboy. So that conversation will be repeated all over the city all weekend. So there's going to be a lot of money on Donald Cerrone, too. Donald Cerrone's got a big fan base as well, you know. But what you're going to get with Conor McGregor is McGregor's just going to be in every Moneyline parlay this weekend. Guys parlaying McGregor to other big favorites on the UFC 246 card. Guys parlaying McGregor to the Chiefs and the 49ers Moneylines on Sunday will be really popular, too. So there's going to be a lot of action both ways. My guess is we'll need Cerrone when the fight starts, but I don't think it's going to be like something where we're really buried, because there's going to be enough support for Cowboy, too.
Okay, good. And you're right. The plus money, the allure of winning a lot of money. Any sharp action you have?
Yeah, for sure. Our sharpest MMA bettor bet Raquel Pennington +140 against Holly Holm. She's down to +110 right now at our book. Also, Alexa Grasso, they took +130 and +120 against Claudia Gadelha. And Grasso's now favorite here. She's -115 at the Superbook.
So you move it that much on one bet, or you had a couple sharp
No,
plays?
It's been the market just kept moving after okay. those bets. Okay. So in both of those cases, so a lot of sharp support in both of those fights. Nothing else on this card I would really call sharp. And honestly, it's not a great UFC card because the UFC knows that with McGregor and Cerrone, but especially McGregor, people are going to pay for it anyway. So they really didn't stack it with a great deep event. But I know it's going to sell because Conor McGregor's back for the first time in over a year.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you make of that? You're a big fight fan. What do you make of his return?
I wouldn't want to lay this big of a price on him. He doesn't come across like he normally does in his interviews. He's being all polite and mild-mannered. I mean, where's the crazy Conor McGregor? I think he'll probably win because I think Donald Cerrone is shot. But I don't know that I'd want to lay -340. That's a pretty big price to lay, and it's a lot higher than what I originally opened it.
It's funny you mentioned how he is sort of behaving at the press, because I do. That's kind of like made me skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not.
I was just really surprised that this fight was at 170 pounds, because McGregor could have told Cerrone, "I want to fight at any weight that McGregor wanted," and Cerrone would have agreed to anything because he wants this payday against Conor McGregor. So I was surprised that McGregor would go up to 170 to meet him there.
He's 1-1 in his career at that weight. Both fights against Nate Diaz split them.
Nate Diaz. Yeah, I mean, if you're Conor McGregor, you can dictate the terms to any of these guys. They'll all say yes to anything Conor wants because they all want the payday of their life. So why would he move up to Cerrone's weight? That really surprised me a lot.
All right, you ready for it, buddy?
Not really, but I'm going to do my best.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Prince of Props, not delivering.
Yeah, you know, he's very, very upset. He texted me yesterday, and he's like, "I'm so sorry. I think I sunk you in the bonanza." And I just, don't worry about it. We still have two more weeks to go here. He might make a rebound on the Super Bowl.
I did not like the Lockett play. I told you the time. The guy is a machine, man. The guy.
Yeah, he's a great player.
I was not overreacting the Metcalf thing. I think they played possum a little bit against the Eagles, so to speak, given the injury to Wentz. I think Lockett is just incredible. He's always open. Wilson, I don't know why they ever run, and they wasted some possessions, some drives in the first half.
I couldn't agree with you more. They're trying to establish the run with Marshawn Lynch, who's like 100 years old. Just tell Russell Wilson every play is 3rd and 18. Just put up 3rd and 18 and make Russell Wilson think that's what he needs on every play. Why do they, as soon as they force Russell Wilson to try to throw the ball downfield, their offense looks incredible. I don't know what the hell they're doing, wasting their time establishing the run with Marshawn Lynch. I mean, I hear all the time that Seattle's a second-half team. That's because their play calling in the first half is so dumb that they fall behind, and then they have to let Russell Wilson go in the second half, and then he's awesome.
And they finally realize he's their best player. So, well, I lose my money line parlay. San Francisco was a walk in the park. Ravens do not get there. So even though the Prince of Props let you down, you know, it's only a small setback. So you lost the sacks prop as well. So minus 2,200 for you, minus 1,630 for me.
Oof, man, that's not good, man. You go first here. This is getting embarrassing.
So I thought about it, Murray. And I would have buried you. I almost went for the middle with the Seahawks Packers game, and we didn't talk about it earlier, but it came down to the 2-point conversion. But I almost laid it and then would have played it back and hit another middle involving a Seahawks game. But I did not. I was just going to ride out the sweat out because I was, you know, obviously I'd lost my money line parlay on Saturday and wanted some action on Sunday, so I did not do that for the bonanza. Just for the bonanza, I did not do it. But I'm going to do the teaser. I am.
Okay.
Both favorites down to, well, I guess it doesn't really matter, but I guess I'll tease it to one. Because are all shops ties lose for teasers?
No, actually, in Nevada, if you do a two-team teaser
and one
of them pushes, you get a refund even if the other one loses.
Right. So that's a reminder to all you at home.
That's in Nevada.
Correct.
That's in Nevada.
And maybe other states.
You need to look into what your state has, but Yeah, I mean, you in Nevada, if you're doing a two-teamer, you really want to use the whole numbers because of that rule.
Right, so you're getting an extra half point, basically. So if you're teasing from 7-1, you get a little bit of a break in potential. So if you win one and push one, it's a push. If you lose one and push, it's also a push. So don't rip up your tickets if you lose a teaser and your other leg does not have a half point on it. You have life.
That is the rule. Albeit
a very small margin of life, but you do.
I've seen it happen, man. I've seen really big teaser bets over the years where the first leg lost and the second leg pushed and the individual got his money back. It has happened before. It's ridiculous, but it has happened.
Of course. Of course it's going to happen. So I will do the -1.5 in the San Francisco game, the -1 in the Kansas City game, and I will do it for $2,000.
$2,000.
Got to make
a
move.
Okay, well then, I don't like anything out of these two games. And the Prince, he's so embarrassed. I don't know if he's going to come out of
his
show.
He's on the bench. You put him on the sideline for this one?
No. I would never bench him. But I'll just put me down for I'll do Kansas City -7 for 550 to win 500. But I personally can't get involved in these two games. I don't know. No, I don't really have any feel for it. I think your teaser is probably going to win, and actually I hope that it does win because I think it'll set up the best possible Super Bowl for the books out here.
I would agree, and I like your Chiefs play too. I think if I had to lay one of the numbers, I'd lay Kansas City, but I told you I like this Titans team. They had all the makings. I sure wish I had that 30-1, especially in the Bonanza. It'd be nice to be sitting on a – I did say last week -120 for the Niners to win the NFC was like free money. Like, that was a gift.
We'll
you guys
see.
Moved it, like, 5 cents after the Saints losing.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens here with this Green Bay game. I do think the 49ers are much better than Green Bay, but I don't want to lay more than a touchdown because, like I said earlier, Aaron Rodgers kind of scared me with some of those throws he made on Sunday. And I don't know that I'd want to lay a bunch of points against Aaron Rodgers. So, I don't really trust Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, and I don't think Kyle Shanahan does. When he ran 12 times in a row. After that half interception at the end of the first half, I think he's saying, like, the only way I lose this game is if he throws a pick, so we're running it down their throat, and sure enough.
And he threw a terrible pick in the first half of that game.
That's the thing, yeah, that sparked it.
Fortunately for him, his defense was just so suffocating. The 49ers still were able to win pretty easily.
All right, man, great stuff as always, Murray. Enjoy the games, and we'll be talking Super Bowl as well.
Yes, sir. I'll talk to you next week.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Thanks to everyone for downloading. Thanks to Chael Sonnen for taking the time to join us from Las Vegas, as well as John Murray, Mr. Executive Director. It was an awesome, fun college football season, even without Ohio State in there, Travis.
Sorry, did you say something?
Yeah, exactly. But a good ride for everyone. We hopefully gave out a lot of winners here. Thanks to Matt Eumanns, Aaron Renning, Paul Stone for all their effort. Preston Johnson as well. I apologize for forgetting Preston. Long season. Do a lot of plays. Thanks to everyone for contributing as guests. And then obviously the NFL is going to wrap up soon. But a lot of moving parts here. We're going to do a lot more college hoops and NBA moving forward. I know it's a day-to-day sport, but we'll do things like tape on a Wednesday, looking ahead to that night's games, but also looking ahead to Thursday and the weekend. So we're going to have some stuff like that moving around. But we're still focused on football. We'll have a pod next week. So until then, enjoy your weekend and good luck.